reducing the amount of food waste on a local and global scale. The numbers are staggering. According to the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, we waste 2.9 trillion pounds of food around the globe each year. That's enough to feed the world's hungry two times over. Here in the U.S., it's estimated that 30 to 40% of food is wasted. It's an issue causing increasing alarm and gaining more attention. Last fall, the USDA launched a new goal to reduce the amount of food waste in the U.S. by 50% by 2030. Last month, France passed legislation banning food waste from grocery stores, fining grocery stores if they throw out food. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll discuss efforts to reduce food waste here in Maine and promote composting of inedible foods. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. How many times have you taken home leftovers from a restaurant only to eventually throw out the doggy bag instead of eating what's inside of it? Or maybe you've bought something you planned on cooking but never got around to using the perishable items before they spoiled. These are just two examples of everyday food waste. Restaurants and grocery stores see food waste on a much larger scale. Today, we're going to talk about what we can do to help curb food waste, and we'll discuss the role of composting, what it can and does play in making the most of our food byproducts. In the studio with me, Jennifer DeHart, Chief Sustainability Officer with Unity College, Brett Richardson, General Manager of We Compost It, and on the line with us, Christine Beeling. She is Project Engineer at the United States Environmental Protection Agency, New England Office. She's going to tell us about the EPA's Food Recovery Challenge. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you notice how much food waste is in your day-to-day activities? Have you taken steps to reduce it? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Christine, I want to start with the big picture. I understand, I think it's understandable to think of food waste as, you know, throwing out the leftovers, but this is a big systemic issue, isn't it? Where do we see the problem in America?
Well, we see the problem in America, actually, in yours and my homes. Half of the food waste that we do waste in this country comes from you and me, the consumer. It doesn't come from the larger institutions. So we have a two-pronged problem, what's going on in our homes and what's going on in institutions. But many people think food waste is spoiled food, and that's what I really want to get at today. Many cases, we're not talking food waste. We're talking wholesome, nutritious food that just ends up wasted in our landfills. So I really want to make that distinction that we have a lot of opportunities to recover food well before we need to compost it.
Right. We're wasting perfectly good food. Where is it? I mean, this starts in the fields, doesn't it? There is a lot of produce that is left, and it's not gleaned.
It's in the fields, much less in our manufacturing processes, because wasted food does equal money. So the manufacturers have done a good job. Many of the grocery stores, especially in Maine, Hannaford's, for example, BJ's, Whole Foods have really done great jobs at going zero waste in their stores. And Unity College, I'm looking forward to what you have to say, because many of the colleges and institutions are also doing a great job with food waste within their systems. So many players in this game.
Jennifer, then I'll turn to you. College dining halls go through a lot of food. What has Unity College done to make food usage more efficient and less wasteful?
Right. Well, good questions. And I'd say, taking a step back for higher education, very often you'll find that some of the driving factors for higher education institutions taking a look at their place in the food system are the students. And the students come with a variety of awarenesses. They're concerned about the ethical implications of the food that we don't eat at the colleges. And they're also concerned with the environmental aspects of it as well. And, of course, we're always looking at ways to save costs. So students are very aware of the plate waste, what their peers or themselves take onto the plate and then decide not to eat, maybe because they took too much or they're unfamiliar with the cuisine. And we also see a lot of overproduction at some of our catered events around the institutions. So, students are driving factors in trying to motivate each other to take only what you can eat. Just because it's an all-you-care-to-eat doesn't mean you should fill your plate if you don't need to. And we also look at production methods, many of which Christine and the website for the Food Challenge promote. in terms of being very frugal with how we prepare our food. And we also are taking a close look at our inventory management. We also try to keep very close records on what we make and what is actually consumed so we can better plan for what we serve in the dining halls and also our catered events.
Brent, your efforts are to make sure food is, that is no longer edible does not go into the trash can or down the disposal. Tell me about your organization, how it started, and what you're doing.
We Compost It started in 2009, actually as a student project at the University of Southern Maine. We won the business plan competition there to start a food scrap collection and composting company. And we've been at it now for almost 6 years.
And where do your food scraps come from, and how much do you process?
We do about 400 tons a month right now, if you can believe that. As Christine and Jennifer mentioned, we really like to focus on the stuff that can no longer be used. So we work with 120 restaurants, 7 hospitals, 5 or 6 colleges, 40 public schools, 750 residential subscribers. So we really have a collective system that can meet different generators where they're at and to right size the service to make sure it's clean and convenient and also cost effective. Folks want to do the right thing with their food scraps when it can make economic sense, and we've got a service that's very efficient. We also then take the food scraps back to our own composting facility and transform that what is a, really a resource of energy and nutrients for the soil into Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association approved compost. So it's high-quality soil that goes back into growing tomorrow's food and flowers.
Christine, Jennifer mentioned the Food Recovery Challenge. Tell me, what is the Food Recovery Challenge? This is fairly new, and it's nationwide, right?
Yeah, it's been around for about, actually, 5 years now, believe it or not. And the Food Recovery Challenge is really an outreach program to businesses and institutions to get this message across. So much of my job, I'm happy to say I'm a carrot, not a stick. I'm not a regulator at the Environmental Protection Agency. I'm an outreach person. And so much of it is awareness of this issue. And as you probably know, this is becoming a really hot issue. National Geographic has covered it. It's in the mainstream media. And why is because food, more than any other single material, is in our trash. It's the most thrown away yet resource, as Brett said, in our trash on a daily basis. And just to complement Brett's work, only in 2008 we composted about 2.3% of that, which is hardly anything. In 2013 we doubled that. We're up to 5% of our organics are composted, and these are nationwide figures. So really there's a long way to go and a lot of opportunities out there.
Tell me about the food recovery hierarchy. And for our listeners who go online, I have posted this on the MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page so people can look at it visually. But what is that, and how does it help guide how we think about food?
So the food recovery hierarchy is a wonderful tool that EPA and the U.S. Department of Agriculture put together literally 20 years ago when this issue came to light. And if you think of an upside-down triangle, the top being the biggest option, think about our 3 R's that we all know we learned as kids: reduce, reuse, recycle. It kind of builds off that. So the top of the pyramid is don't make the waste in the first place. Be smart. The second tier is feed the people. And that's what we're really focusing on this year at EPA. Next tier, feed the animals. Next tier, anaerobic digestion. We have some of that capability unique in Maine. Composting. So feed the people, feed the animals, feed the soils, make energy while you're at it. And then very, very at the bottom, I don't even want to talk about it, incinerating or landfill food waste.
Okay. You know, it's funny, Jennifer, when you were talking about Unity College and the efforts that students are and the awareness students have, your student population I don't think is typical of the American 18 or 20-year-old. I know from just having lunch with my kids when they were little in elementary school, being horrified at how much food just went into the trash can with the tray at the end of the lunch hour, not just the food, but the carton, the milk cartons and things like that. Mm-hmm. How do we start talking about kids when they're really young about food waste, when we're also trying to talk to them about eating nutritious food and making good choices?
Right. That's a good question. And our students are actually taking that on. This is a well-timed discussion because it is Earth Week. And at our college, both tomorrow and Thursday, we have a group of students who are going to do a weigh the waste demonstration. And so what they're doing is standing in our dining hall and our student center, where we also serve food, and they're going to be capturing all that food before it disappears into the bin. Now, we actually use the food recovery hierarchy. Christine will be good to know. And we do feed people, and then we feed pigs on campus and off campus. And we're considering anaerobic digestion as well as composting. But at the moment, we want to make that waste very visible. And so one thing that might be good, I don't know if you want to do this at home, but what we're doing at Unity is collecting all that food in a clear plastic bin for an entire lunch period and an entire dinner period so that everybody who comes in can see and maybe be grossed out by how much they took onto their plate and then decided not to eat. Making something very visible is sometimes an extremely powerful motivating factor to get people to think twice.
All right. And let me ask you, Brett, about the efforts, the difference between doing something like working with We Compost It and having your own home compost bin, and then looking to other parts of the country where there are actually citywide or community-wide composting programs. Where does Maine kind of stand in relation to other states? I visited San Francisco last year, and everybody has three bins outside of their house on trash day. You've got the trash, the recycling, and the compost bin side by side.
That's a great question. I would put Maine in the top 10. I think that, you know, the West Coast is ahead of us, but I think Maine is ahead of the center part of the country. A big part about this in terms of making composting not only economically viable, but also environmentally sustainable, is trucking. What we do is we move the material around to a centrally located facility. And when you have a citywide program like you have in San Francisco or Toronto or Seattle, what you have are very dense collection routes that are very efficient, and therefore you get an environmental benefit on the sustainability side. Maine's interesting because it's very much an urban state in some parts of the state, but also a large state with a lot of more rural areas. And so different solutions fit different areas better. Backyard composting is a good fit in more rural areas. We also offer, we're pioneering a residential drop-off station. Some towns don't have curbside waste pickup. They go to the transfer station. And so we now partner with 5 communities, expect that to grow to 10 or 15 next year, where residents who go to the transfer station on a regular basis can take their food and drop it off into one of our totes. That said, in the more densely populated areas, we offer curbside collection service. Right now, that's still cost-effective for most folks, but our goal, and I think towns are starting to explore it, is to adopt that San Francisco model where it becomes cost-effective to do this universally. So Maine's a tricky state. It's ahead of many parts of the country. There are challenges in terms of urban versus rural solutions, and the key is to right size and to develop a solution that fits folks where they're at.
On the line with us now is Joe. Joe needs to go, so I'm going to go to him really quickly. Joe Fournier is co-owner and manager of the Farm Stand, and I appreciate you calling in even though you're in the middle of a tight day, Joe. Like farmers throughout Maine, your marquee item is fresh produce at the Farm Stand, but fresh produce spoils. What are you doing at the Farm Stand to eliminate food waste? Joe, are you there? All right, then, Christine, what were you going to say? Go ahead.
I was just going to really jump on what Brett said. I work in the 6 New England states, and we are in a very unique position compared to most of the country, with the exception of the very West Coast. Totally support what Brett was saying, and you guys have the Maine Composting School, which is really known for its leadership. But 4 states in New England have organics bans on the books. Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island, where some of these issues are being taken up in the regulatory framework. So a little bit different model in Maine at this point in time.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that? Organic what?
An organics ban. So, for example, if you operate a business, and each state has a slightly different regulation, but if you operate a business and generate 1 ton of organics per week, you must use an option like composting or anaerobic digestion. You cannot put that in the trash legally anymore.
Okay, I understand we have Joe Fournier back. Joe Fournier, tell me what's going on at the Farm Stand to reduce food waste.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, go ahead.
Sorry about that. So we're doing all we can to avoid the compost bucket. As you said, we have fresh produce. So we pull that from the shelf and bring it to our production kitchen that we've had since day one, which is really, its function is to intervene and keep food where it's supposed to be on the dinner plate and not in the garbage, not in the compost.
So how do you do that?
You know, it's a lot of diligence and making sure that we're pulling stuff off the shelf, or, you know, it's still perfectly good. It's just not perfect looking. So what we do is once there's a blemish, we take it off and we add value to it. We turn it into a soup. We turn it into a salad, or lasagna, enchiladas, all sorts of a whole array of value added meals to go.
So really good advice for a lot of home cooks doing what their mothers and grandmothers and chefs and their families have done for a long time, making soups, making stocks, things like that with produce that's less than perfect.
And I'd also like to add protein. We take a lot of cuts that aren't desirable and are hard to deal with and turn those into more consumable food.
Have you had a response from your customers?
We don't really beat the drum loud enough, and it's also kind of hard to market. You know, how do you say we're taking this aging product off the shelf and turning it into food that you can buy? So it's a touchy subject, and it's hard to kind of market that. So we do try to, you know, inform the customer about what we're doing at the farm stand, but it's a fine line of how to describe it and sell the food that we're preparing.
Joe Fournier, thanks for calling in, and I'm so glad that we were able to connect. We do have to go to a break, but we'll pick up this conversation when we get back. We're talking about eliminating food waste. This is Maine Calling.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by Patriot Subaru, providing sales, service, and accessories on new and pre-owned all-wheel drive Subarus on Route 1 in Saco, and St. Joseph's College, offering the CPA Workshop Series. Register by May 19th at cpaseries.com.
We know that many of you have choices in what you listen to, and many of you would prefer to hear what you want when you want. And while Maine news coverage is an important part of our morning edition, All Things Considered, and weekend edition programming, sometimes you just want to learn about what's happening between Kittery and Fort Kent, nothing else, but all at once and when you want. The answer is This Day in Maine, for streaming or podcast, available weekdays around 7 each evening at mpbn.net and also through iTunes.
This evening, Maine Public Radio will provide live NPR coverage of the New York primary results. With much at stake in both parties, our coverage gets underway at 9 o'clock this evening. Leading into our coverage, starting at 8 o'clock, we'll offer another hour of All Things Considered. The Chicago Symphony Orchestra will not be heard this evening as a result. Again, that's live coverage of NPR of the primary voting in New York State starting at 9 o'clock this evening right here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Addressing Food Waste. With me in the studio, Jennifer DeHart. She is the Chief Sustainability Officer at Unity College. Brett Richardson is General Manager of We Compost It. And on the line with us, Christine Beeling. She is a project engineer at the United States Environmental Protection Agency's New England office. We invite you to join the conversation. 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief, please make it brief, email to talk@mpbn.net. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We're going to take a listen to a brief conversation I had last week with Frances Moore LePay. She is the author of the 1971 bestseller Diet for a Small Planet. She was one of the first authors to write about the impact of meat production on the environment and to advocate for a plant-based diet. I asked her about the scope of the food waste problem.
Well, there are two distinct parts. You know, the part that was my awakening was the part that we take for granted. We don't even call it waste, right? Feeding grain to livestock, for example, feeding potentially edible cropland, being, you know, cropland producing edible products and feeding it to livestock. We don't even call that waste. So there's that piece, and then there's the literal waste, what people more think of as waste. About a third of the world's food supply is wasted on average. So the causes of that have a great deal to do with extreme poverty, that some of that is farmers who can't afford to store their food, farmers who can't access markets, so there's all the waste of food that they could grow but don't because they can't get it to market. So much of the waste from the beginning of the food chain is due to poverty. And then, of course, within the industrial system, there's tremendous waste because of focus on cosmetic appearance, that we're trained to think that a perfect fruit is all we can eat, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I talk in World Hunger 10 Myths, use an example of a vegetable processing factory in the UK that has a machine that tosses out any carrot that's not arrow straight. So obviously a crooked carrot is just as good for us as a straight one. So there's so many dimensions.
What are some simple steps our listeners could do if they're concerned about this issue? What can individuals do to help reduce food waste?
Well, I think learning about the crisis is not scarcity, and freeing people up from that fear. Fear, it turns out, psychologists tell us that fear really makes us more self-interested and pretty blocked in our thinking. So just to share with others that there's more than enough food in the world today for each of us to be chubby, actually, and that we each can be careful. I mean, I know writing World Hunger 10 Myths, I became much more conscious of using my leftovers, for example, and not sort of scouring the fruit in the supermarket to see which ones had no blemishes, you know, but being able to say, wait a minute, it doesn't matter if that's a little nick there, you know.
And that was Frances Moore LePay, the author of several books, including the seminal Diet for a Small Planet back in 1971. It's interesting, during the break, we were talking about our own tips, and we have an email from Bill who writes, one way to avoid food waste is to shop like the French, my family heritage and what I grew up with. Shop every day for what you need and cook it. My family has almost no waste in our home. Also, buy local whenever you can to avoid the large production farms. You said that's what you do in your family, right, Brett?
That's correct. You started to really pay attention to the food waste you generate at home. And we found that by going more frequently and buying what we need that day, you buy fresher ingredients, and also you end up using it that day.
Right. And I find the opposite. I buy once a week, but I plan. I know what I'm going to make for dinner every night. And so everything is, I know that tonight we're having haddock with broccoli and carrots because that's what I put on the back of my grocery list when I went. I don't know if that's the best way to do it, but it works for my family. We're on the line with us right now is Willie Rich. He's the spokesperson for Representative Shelley Pingree. Willie, I know that food and food systems have been big issues for Representative Pingree since she was elected to state office. What's going on right now? What is she working on in Congress?
Well, Jen, actually, at this very moment, she's in an Appropriations Committee hearing where they are dealing with some of the issues that you have talked about on the program so far around food waste. And late last year, she actually introduced a large sort of landmark piece of legislation aimed to reduce food waste sort of throughout our economy. And it's a big bill. It's an ambitious bill with a couple of dozen proposals in it that sort of seek to tackle food waste at basically at four different levels: at the consumer level, in grocery stores and restaurants, in schools, and on the farm. And as you know, she introduced a bill about local foods a few years ago. It's kind of similar to this, with an ambitious bill with a couple of dozen proposals in it. And eventually, most of those little pieces were adopted and passed through other pieces of legislation like the Farm Bill. So she's kind of doing using the same tactic this time. Her big bill on food waste may not be passed in its entirety, but her plan and her goal is to pick out as many of these pieces to address the problems and get them passed through other pieces of legislation.
Go ahead, Willie.
She's going to do that with is date labeling. And I've listened to most of your show so far. I don't know if you had a chance to talk about that yet this morning.
No, we haven't talked about date labeling yet, but I understand that this is really, a lot of people will look at the dates on a label and think a food is bad after that date when it's really not the case. So what would this bill do?
So this bill includes a provision for date labeling, but she's actually going to sort of pull that out and probably next week announce and introduce a bill that deals specifically with date labeling. There is no standard for date labeling. I think a lot of folks pick up something off the shelf and think that somehow the government has set some rules that say this is what the date label means. The wording on it is random. The amount of time that it is that the food is considered to be good is, you know, is somewhat random. Recently, I talked to some food scientists who worked with a major soup company, and they determined that the soup in those cans was probably good for about 10 years, but they didn't want to put a 10-year date on the can, so they sort of arbitrarily picked a date 2 years in the future. So what Congresswoman Pingree's bill would do is to establish some very standard language that would be put on date labels. And with the exception of foods that really are dangerous to eat if they're left in the fridge too long, like deli meats and some smoked seafoods and things like that, with the exception of that small group of foods, everything else you buy at the grocery store would say one thing, best buy or best if used by or something like that. And then it would be important to embark on a consumer education campaign so folks know that doesn't mean you have to throw it out on that date. Jen, I don't know if you've had this experience at home or not, but almost everybody we've talked to relates a story about a debate or an argument they've had at home with their husband or their wife or their partner, in which one of them thinks you got to throw the food out when the date on the label's passed, and the other one thinks it's perfectly good.
Well, Willie, thanks so much for calling in. We've got so many calls coming in. I'm going to say goodbye to you. I appreciate it. And we are going to go first to Laurel, who's calling from Brunswick. Hi, Laurel. Go ahead.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great. Great program. So I work at a local food bank, the kitchen food pantry agency in the area. I could go on and on about all the great partners we have who our volunteers processed over 700,000 pounds of donated food in 2015, which is amazing. My question for you today is this. So a theme that I have heard around a lot of food pantries is that there is plenty of donated bread. We love it. The clients love it. It's really great to give out. What I'm wondering is, why do the stores keep making so much bread if they know they're going to be donating so much of it?
Huh. I don't know if my guests today have an answer to that. Christine, is that something you know?
No, it's not. Well, I shouldn't say no, it's not. I think some do take that into account and look upstream and do. I know in a couple of examples, I don't want to throw names out there, but you're right. It's a matter of changing our culture and to look upstream and to see what we waste. And I think we were talking about generating it in a clear barrel so people start to really visualize what you waste, and then you start realizing it's money. And that will shift over time.
Laurel,
shift over time.
Thank you.
Laurel, thanks for your call. We're going to move to Brunswick. And Nate, hi, Nate. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. This is a great conversation and a great segue from Midcoast Hunger, the previous caller before. My spouse and I opened a local cafe and eatery called New Beat Market on Brunswick Landing. We're partnering with Midcoast and a few other nonprofits in the area to share the majority of our profits and to source locally from farmers. And there was a comment earlier about how consumers can better plan for sourcing by making a list before they go to school and before they go to the store and so on. And our experience from a business side is very similar to that, in that it's, you know, the traditional restaurant model is perhaps similar to showing up at the grocery store and browsing around and picking whatever looks good off the shelf. You know, the large distributor shows up once a week and the chef checks off what he wants or what she wants, and everything comes off that one vehicle. What we're doing and we're finding works well from a sustainability standpoint, but it certainly isn't easy, is to partner with local farmers, and I very much mean partner, from, you know, communication from, you know, the middle of the winter to the peak production season, to plan the menu, plan what you're going to consume. So I'm speaking in business terms, but I think the same could apply to a consumer. You know, you mentioned menu planning. You know, what are you going to eat next week? But more so, what do you know that you're going to want in the summer? Increasingly, farmers and local producers are offering CSAs or deposit programs. So, you know, share half the cost of a pig and you get a lower price per pound on the ham and bacon on the back end. I think that, you know, those programs like that that take a culture shift, take a change of the way you buy food, but at the end of the day is not more expensive. And I think that, in fact, it can save a significant amount of money.
Nate, thank you so much for calling in. And Christine, I understand that something that your program is offering is a food too good to waste toolkit.
Yes, food too good to waste. And I've been jumping at the bit to talk about it. It's a toolkit that's been developed exactly what you guys were just talking about. Simple tasks, making a shopping list, have an eat me first box, storage tips to where to put things in your fridge, and we have folks measure the amount of food waste that they generate. It's on our website, Food Too Good to Waste. It came out of the West Coast. For those of you who have traveled abroad, the UK has Love Food, Hate Waste. But very practical tool tips, which really are kind of mom and apple pie, but do lead to like a 30% reduction per family when you really start to look at what you generate. So exactly what you did for your menu tonight, Jennifer, and exactly what Brett does in his home.
All right. I want to go to an email now. This is from Carol. At an elementary school in Oxford County, the rule for free breakfast and free lunch, all students receive this free food, is that the students must take food even if they don't want it. Many were quickly dropping fresh fruit in the trash can. We set up a box to collect the fruit, but that's only a small portion of the food that's wasted each day. Are there changes coming for the free meal programs that won't require students to take food that they will only throw away? Do we know the answer to this question, any of you?
It's Chris. It's complicated. There are sharing tables. There's new regs coming out from USDA, I know, because this issue is ubiquitous across the country, and many, many folks are looking to make some changes. So keep an eye out, new regulations coming, and I hope for good changes down the road.
It does speak to how complicated this is, though, because, you know, we've done other Maine Calling programs about trying to, you know, tackling childhood obesity, trying to get children to eat more healthy fruits and vegetables. And yet at the same time, we don't want to be wasting. We want kids to try this food without wasting it. And also the culture of not wasting food may mean that people are eating food that they maybe shouldn't be eating because it's too much. They don't need it all. Christine, you all are nodding.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. No, you're absolutely on target. And, you know, it's funny, the worlds are starting to collide. I come from a wasting angle, plate waste, what you throw away on your plate. But you can also characterize that in calories that are being wasted. And the USDA is looking at that from that exact angle. What's the calorie intake that kids are taking and need to take for a healthy lifestyle? So you're really starting to see some nice synergies working to try to solve these problems from both angles.
Okay, we have a call now from Craig, who's with the organization Fiber Right. Hi, Craig. Tell us what your organization does.
Good afternoon. We're just about to start construction of a mixed waste processing facility in Hamden, Maine. We've entered into a contract with the Municipal Review Committee, and we anticipate servicing 187 towns and communities in the area, of which more than 90 have signed up for us now. So we'll be constructing new infrastructure, which we think is part of the very important discussion around food waste and how we handle food waste, because realistically, there is a lot of food waste not properly sequestered or not properly reduced, and particularly in a region with high levels of tourism, you find food waste that is unsuitable for composting or for animal food. And what must you do or what can you do with that food waste other than just landfill or incinerate it? And that's where we believe we come in.
So when is the new facility set to be complete? And how will that food get to your, that waste get to your facility? Will it come in through municipalities' public works departments, or will you be soliciting from restaurants?
No, in fact, we believe that the existing infrastructure that's in place for grocery stores and restaurants where large volumes of food waste are sequestered, that rightfully should be transferred to composting facilities, and that part of the infrastructure is working well. What we're looking at is the food that does not enter into that stream, which is generally residential waste, so the things that end up in black trash bags. That would come to us on trash trucks and transfer trailers, and we have the capacity to handle that. So instead of composting it, we are processing it through anaerobic digestion and creating biogas as opposed to creating compost.
Interesting. So many angles to this issue. We do have to go to another break. Thank you, Craig, for calling. This is Maine Calling.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by Casella, converting landfill gas to electricity, committed to providing clean, renewable energy for Mainers. Casella, giving resources new life. And the Jackson Laboratory, nonprofit genetics research in Bar Harbor, discovering precise genomic solutions to disease. JAX.org. If you watch Maine Public Television, you already know how worthwhile it can be. And we have more of a good thing. Two additional channels, World and Create. They're available over the air and on many of Maine cable companies' digital tiers. World explores our world through many of your favorite programs, such as the News Hour and Nova at different, perhaps more convenient times of the day. Create is our how-to channel with cooking, carpentry, travel, gardening, painting, and craft programs. If you'd like more information about World or Create, including how to find them, see your Experience member guide. Visit mbbn.net and click on television or call us on MPBN Audience Services. And coming up after Maine Calling today in our 1 o'clock Public Affairs Hour, the Commonwealth Club of California welcomes Ellen Malcolm, who in 1985 launched Emily's List, which has grown into a powerhouse political organization over 3 million members strong, focused on creating change by electing pro-choice women to office. That's at 1 o'clock in 20 minutes here on Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, food waste and composting. In the studio with me, Jennifer DeHart, Chief Sustainability Officer at Unity College. Brett Richardson is the General Manager of We Compost It. And on the line with us, Christine Beeling. She is Project Engineer at the EPA's New England office. Join our conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. We're going to go to Kitsy, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Kitsy. Go ahead.
Hi. I had two quick comments to make. One is that I was amazed the first time I went to a college and found out that they had done away with trays in their cafeterias. And I asked why, because I didn't know. And it was that students would fill up their trays, and if they only could take to the table what they could carry in their two hands, that limited the amount of food that was wasted.
As you say that, Kitsy, Jennifer is nodding, so go on.
Yeah. The other comes from the Shakers. In the 19th century, until orphanages were developed, children, many adults who couldn't keep their children, left them at the doorstep of Shakers, and the Shakers brought these children up. And one of the rules that they had for the children was that they needed to, and it's called Shaker Your Plate, a child was allowed to take the food that they thought they could eat, but they needed to clean their plate, shaker their plate. If they wanted more, they could have it, but they should learn not to take more than they truly needed. And that carried right through until they left the Shakers or became Shakers. And I've used that at large conferences in the rules about the food, is because parents usually fill their children's plates with food that the kids will never eat. So we introduce them to the whole idea of shaker your plate.
All right. Well, Kitsy, thank you for your call and more good advice. We're going to go to Lynn, who's calling from Augusta. Hi, Lynn. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm calling about the date labeling. And I buy organic when I can, and have a local store that's part of a, it gets bigger than a convenience store, gas station sort of thing, carrying the more normal non-organics. And they came up with a freezer full of organic beef from a local farm. And I bought a few of those packs, brought them home, found no date on it. I followed this all the way back to the butcher. And the fact that they don't have to date. And in the end, when I finally got somebody in that office to call me back and have a really good conversation, they told me there was a three digits at the bottom corner of the package that they would know gave a relative date to when it was packaged, but nothing about what batch it came from. And we all know that ground beef is, you know, is a challenging food, and that's why getting some organic was a treat. So this piece amazes me that even in the organic world, and I want to know what the thinking is of the farmers. Why would a farmer or a butcher not want to put dates on their food for the consumer?
Okay, so Lynn, I think we might have the wrong panel for you. We're talking about eliminating food waste. We haven't designed this program around food dates. Though, Christine, this is a topic you know something about. Are you able to tackle Lynn's question?
I must admit, I can't tackle Lynn's question, but I think she hit on a topic that's very true, is that date labeling really does nothing for food safety. It's just an arbitrary buy, sell by, use by, best by. And really, we have to use our senses for most decisions. 90% of us throw away food prematurely because we look at those labels, which really don't mean anything from a health perspective. So use your senses. Did the meat smell good? Did it, you know, that's what we have to go by.
I think many people, especially many parents, though, are worried about possibly making their children sick. How to balance that?
You know, the food safety people are the folks to talk about that, and I'm certainly advocating for following all food safety guidelines. But just as the Congresswoman's rep said, those guidelines don't mean anything. Those dates don't mean anything for food safety, with the exception of very few foods and infant formula.
All right. Well, thank you for your call. We're going to go to Kristen, who's calling from Palermo. Hi, Kristen.
Hi. I was calling because I've been growing food now since I was like 10. I've always had a garden. And for years, I've been telling people that we waste more food than is growing. But at the same time, there's this huge push from the agricultural industry that we need to grow more food, you know? And I am wondering, how are we going to be able to get over that message, to have people address the food waste shortage? Because in a way, we have a very big, powerful organization in the agricultural community, you know, with different seed companies and things like that, to create more, you know, mostly GM products.
Kristen, is what you're talking about, because there's so many people who are hungry in the world, the idea that we need to grow more food to feed the world?
Thing that they're saying anyway, because it isn't as if the farm are going
okay.
to be growing for
that. Yeah, you're fading in and out.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. Jennifer, is this an issue that you have talked about at Unity College, or, you know, not necessarily among your students, but just generally the broader issue? We know from the United Nations that we waste more food in this world than it would take to feed the hungry. Yet we hear more and more that we need to find better ways to raise our crops to feed the hungry.
Well, of course, it's a complicated topic. And Francis LePay actually referred to it a bit. There is plenty of food, and one of the difficulties is distribution. And, you know, Brett has the luxury of shopping frequently, but many of us who live in rural areas may not. And we may also live in what are considered food deserts, where there may be a grocery store that's just generally not accessible to a large part of the population, which limits the quality of the food they have access to. And our students are interested in these topics. I know other institutions are taking them on, the food desert concept in particular. If you're able to plan in concert with local growers, as we do, and as one of our callers suggested, that's a really great way to right-size agriculture production for the local markets. It becomes a lot more complicated when your markets are distant. Tastes change. Distribution is a big factor there.
All right, Kristen, thanks for your call. We have an email here from Mona in Glenburn. She says she practices vermicomposting using a worm bin, but only use it for vegetable scraps, apple cores, strawberry tops, etc. However, I can't put my son's uneaten hamburger or trimmed chicken fat in it. Wondering if you can speak to what homeowners can do to prevent our food waste from going into the trash. Brett?
That's a great question and a great contrast between what folks can do in their backyard with composting and what a commercial entity like We Compost It can do. Because of the scale of our piles and the heat that they generate, we're able to take proteins like burgers or cheese or dairy that you can't do in your backyard. We typically can also create a little better back-end compost than what you can generate in your backyard. So there's trade-offs, whether you do it in your backyard, you're keeping trucks off the road and doing something a little more local, but there is going to be material that you cannot capture and cannot recycle into compost. So hopefully there's a solution for both. I would encourage the caller to think about composting in her backyard the materials that she can, and to reach out to her local public works department to see if they could partner with a business like We Compost It to take those materials that she can't generate or treat in her backyard.
Okay, we have an email from Bill. He's the co-chair of the Maine Food System Innovation Challenge. He wants people to know about the second annual Maine Food System Innovation Challenge that's going to be in November at Bowdoin College. This year, they've added a track for college teams to compete. The challenge is develop a product, service, or organizational structure, reduce or reuse food waste pre- and post-consumption. 8 teams will be admitted to the competition, and there are cash prizes and technical assistance. We will post information about the Maine Food System Innovation Challenge on our website. Interesting, Brett, since you started as a college student thinking about these issues. We're going to go to Margaret, who's calling from Orland. Hi, Margaret. Go ahead.
Hi. I just recently saw a documentary that was being promoted by the Natural Resources Council of Maine, and I saw their first a projection of this in Blue Hill just a week ago, called Just Eat It. People should stick that in their mind because it's going to be shown at other places around Maine, and look for that because it's so entertaining and also so informing. And I think we hear all about this in words, but when you see the visuals, it is impactful. And it really tells the story of a couple who took on the challenge of eating nothing but waste food for 6 months, and they found that they didn't have to eat off of people's plates, that there was so much waste food in other aspects of the food system, all the way from the farm up through the stores and afterwards. I mean, visuals where you see a huge dumpster full of unopened cartons of hummus that have not even gone, they're not even past that first buy date. Perfectly good, going to be dumped. And then, so people look for that. Just Eat It. And I think there's a subtitle. I don't know that they put it in the newspaper, but it has to do with waste food.
Okay. Margaret, thanks for your call. Christine, we were talking during, excuse me, Jennifer, we were talking during the break about the students at Unity College, and this was after the phone call from the farm stand when they mm-hmm. talked about it's tricky to talk about food that's not perfect as being usable. But you said your students really don't have an issue with that.
No, actually, I just want to tag on to the last caller. Just Eat It is being shown at UMaine at 5 p.m. today. Again,
oh,
it's Earth Week, so you're going to find screenings of that movie throughout the week. But yes, what we really enjoy about working closely with our farm, and we do have a 13-acre farm with 38,000 square feet of greenhouse space, so we do produce a lot of salad greens and produce throughout the year. And we have a commitment between dining services and our grower ourselves to use that produce. And whenever they find spotty spinach or, you know, slightly bruised produce, our chefs love taking that and turning it into our sauces, into our dressings. So we have herbed mayonnaise, for example. And what's really great about that is we made it ourselves. And anytime we can make something ourselves, we're actually saving money. So it's kind of a win-win-win.
All right. We have one call. We'll try to get to one more call, and this is Mike in Westbrook. Hi, Mike. Go ahead.
Yes. My doctor said I had borderline cholesterol, so he told me to watch a documentary called Forks Over Knives, and it's about eating a plant-based diet. And after a year on my annual physical, my cholesterol is well below limits, and I'm living healthier. I still eat meat, but it's a plant-based diet. It's low on the food chain. It's better for the planet. It's better for the people, and I'd recommend it.
Oh, thanks for your call, Mike. And Christine, this is part of the puzzle, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a great example.
All right. Thanks so much for calling. We have just a couple minutes, so I'm going to go do a little roundtable here and ask each of our guests for just one bit of advice that a listener can take away, and I'll start with you, Jennifer. What is one thing that your students or your friends and family have found made a big difference in their approach to food and food waste?
One thing we're doing is helping our staff in the dining services, especially our prep folks, understand how to make the best use of every scrap of vegetable. So it depends, you know, the way you cut your onion and what you do with the skin can go a long way to making sure you're using every bit of the money and the energy we all put into our food so that none of it goes to the trash.
Okay. What about you, Brett?
Our experience working with homeowners, for example, is there's a big perception that dealing with the stuff that can't be reused in terms of actual food waste, that when they separate that in the kitchen for composting, that they deal with a lot of number of issues in terms of their trash doesn't smell as bad, their life gets better in a variety of ways. So folks have this perception of composting as being more work and being more issues. It actually reduces and eliminates issues.
Okay, Christine, you're last. What's a little bit of advice you'd like us all to take away with today?
Well, first of all, it's Earth Week, so go out and celebrate Earth Week in many, many ways, from litter cleanups to what we're talking about today. EPA's theme for Earth Week this year is food recovery, just by coincidence, and feeding people and not landfills. So think about all the tips we talked about here today and to feed the people and not throw valuable resources, just like Brett said, into the trash.
Well, thank you all for joining us today. Christine Beeling is project engineer at the EPA's New England office. Jennifer DeHart, Chief Sustainability Officer with Unity College, and Brett Richardson, General Manager of We Compost It. Jonathan Woodward ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives by visiting mainecalling.net. Today's program will be rebroadcast this evening at midnight. The executive producer of Maine Calling is Jonathan Smith. Tomorrow on the program, join me for a conversation about the importance of sleep, especially for teenagers. We'll hear from a leading sleep researcher on her new findings and learn what can be done to help ensure that teens and the rest of us get enough Z's. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.